So after tonight, there's only 10 games left.
Nice. So much to do, so little time.
That's right. Playoffs are nigh.
Sounds so ominous.
It might be, my friend.
Yeah, so just prepare to...
It'll be great.
It'll be perfect. Yeah, so
just prepare to... Y'all motherfuckers don't watch us play throughout the year, to tell you the truth. I'm gonna be real with you, and I don't care if I get fined.
That train is off the track.
I feel like you can't just like jump through Neptune and be okay.
Just prepare to.
What the show needs is more dogs and bears and chickens and stuff.
Yeah, so just prepare to be a watch and unbelievable goodness.
Welcome, Pacers fans. You are listening to the Undebeatables, your semi-weekly Pacers podcast. The Pacers have had one game since our last show, so we're going to give a rare midweek update. We'll also have a stat of the week, look down the home stretch, and speculate wildly about an undergoogleable. We're a little shorthanded this show. I am John Harper, the show's never before used enforcer. Joining me from Indianapolis is our in-house bartender, mixing up the drinks. And I assume someday we'll get another crappy jingle. Jonathan Coles.
It's been a while on the crappy jingles. What is up, Harper? I'm so glad you're here. Yeah, these midweek shows are tough for people that like get up in the morning and stuff. Lame.
Yeah, it's really my fault because I'm on the East Coast or on the West Coast, so you guys are all 3 hours ahead of me. So
it works great. For editing though. So
yeah, concur.
Quick shout out to Culture. Went to the Phoenix Theater this weekend and saw Hotel Nepenthe. And I think it was good. So check it out. The reason I mention this is because it was sold out, not just at the show I was at, but it sold out its entire showing to the point where they had to add a weekend. So clearly people are going to see it. I assume that people are like, either having to see it twice to understand it, or they're kind of like, you know, to their friends, like, I think the milk is bad. You try it. You know, it's one of those things.
Right. It's like waiting for Godot. You're like, huh, I don't know. It just happened.
It's pretty much. But we did, you know, my family and I talked about it for 2 hours after the show. So it did its job.
I mean, yeah, no, that definitely did its job.
But we don't know what happened or anything about it. So shout out Culture, go see it. I think it made me think.
Yeah. I feel like every time you shout out Culture, it's the Phoenix Theater. Do you do anything? Is there any culture that you partake in that is not happening at the Phoenix?
I go to the art museum. And that's about it.
You've those are the literally two never shouted that out on this show to my
I mind. Never have? Oh, it's great. You should go to the so. We have a great art museum. Particularly
I'm gonna shout out the Indianapolis Art Museum.
Have you ever been?
Yeah. Yeah, not only that, but suck it. I just stole your thunder. So.
You beat me to it.
Yeah,
no, I'm a member. I have a year pass to the Indianapolis Art Museum.
It's been a long time. I mean, I haven't been since I lived there.
No, so. They've done a lot of remodeling. They got a little cafe in there now and all that stuff. It's nice.
It's your favorite part of it. It is.
I get a beer at the end. It's a little reward system for my...
I made Culture. That's right. Beer me.
What's nice about the Phoenix is I can have wine while enjoying the Culture. So there's that.
Nice. Nice. I'm also going to shout out Culture. I saw Captain Marvel.
Hey, Culture. What'd you think?
That was fine.
Yeah, it's a superhero movie.
It was fine.
I love them.
This probably needs to be cut out, but I was super annoyed that there were intergalactic phone calls from landlines.
That annoyed me. Well, no, but like she definitely souped it up with like, you know, she other found wires? Some stuff in radio. Yeah. Fair critique.
Fair critique. Huh? I also wanted to shout out, I missed our last show, much to my chagrin. We beat the Oklahoma City Thunder. It was glorious.
Yep.
And it made me so happy. That was a top line item for my season. And the Pacers, in super dramatic fashion, pulled that thing from the jaws of defeat. That made me really happy. That was easily a highlight of the Pacers season. So I won't talk about it too much because I'm going to be talking about it again in a month when we do our season wrap up. I loved every bit of it. And I hope everybody got a chance to see it. If not, go back and watch it. And Paul George, suck it.
So if we don't hit 50 wins, if we don't get home court advantage in the playoffs, and we don't have at least above 500 road record, which were set out goals for us, you're fine now. It's okay.
I didn't say it was a top line item. It wasn't the only top line item.
No, it was beautiful. You're right. It made me so happy. A dramatic fashion coming back from 19 down in the third.
It was amazing. Seriously. If you haven't seen it, go and watch it. It was really, really great stuff. Before we get any further along the show, I did want to remind you that you can support us by following the link in our show notes. Next time you shop on Amazon, gives us a little kickback every time you buy. We're going to start the week with a stat of the week.
Joey, stat of the week!
Dirk Nowitzki passes, as we should both be typing wildly here. Dirk Nowitzki passes Will Chamberlain on the all-time scoring list. Do you care?
Do I care?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I've been rooting for this all year. I was really concerned based on his scoring average that he was not going to make it happen. I was thinking maybe this would, come down to the last couple games, but knocked it out.
It really looked like it for a while, right?
Yeah, where he was averaging like 6 points a game. Yeah, but he's looked refreshed since the All-Star break. He's making an impact. He passes this one. I'm not gonna say easily. There's only like 11 games left, but he definitely he's gonna have a little breathing room. Now in sixth spot all time for NBA scorers. Just a fantastic achievement, and nestled right in between Michael Jordan and Wilt Chamberlain is not a bad place to be.
No, I think he can sleep pretty good at night with that knowledge.
For sure.
Really no chance he's going to catch Jordan. He's about 800 behind. It doesn't look like a likely scenario, but anything is possible, I suppose.
Well, if he comes back next year, then
if he comes back next year, clearly. I don't see him scoring 100 a game.
Well, that would definitely be another way to pass Wilt. If he wanted to do that.
Yeah. I thought it was fitting, though, in the game where he passed Chamberlain, Doncic posted a triple-dub, 29, 13, and 10 assists.
Mm. Sounds like a Wilt game.
Well, it's just great, right? I mean, Dirk Nowitzki clearly passing the torch this season. And,
for sure.
You know, even in the game where Dirk, puts the cherry on top of his own career, Luka is stepping into that void and helping him get there. Just a cool thing. If you're Dallas, you can be very excited for the future, and you're in that rare position where you can be celebrating your past at the same time. It's just kind of a cool thing, right? I mean, most of the time when superstars are moving on, your team sucks and people are old and overpaid.
Right.
Not the case in Dallas, right? They've definitely got some guys they can build around there. And Dirk is going to be a part of that franchise forever. So.
That was kind of the case in Reggie's last season, except we had the brawl in the middle. But he was
that kind of screwed stuff up, right?
It did. But that was the idea, where he was passing the torch to the younger players and letting them continue to succeed. But we had to blow everything up.
And remember Kobe's last year? It was just the Kobe tour,
right?
Like he wouldn't even pass the ball for like 30 games. It was just ridiculous. So a much better roadmap in Dallas for sure.
For sure. And he got two standing ovations, so that's nice. As well he should.
Yeah. One's never enough in my experience.
I'm sure he's going to get several more before this is all over.
Moving on, we did have one game Monday night. The Indiana Pacers travel to the Moda Center in Portland to take on the Portland Trail Blazers, a place where they do not have much success to speak of in the past decade. And they were not able to turn the tide in this one, losing 106-98. 28 points from Miles Turner and 10 boards. Solid double-double for him. Bogey shot just 13 times in this game. Wes had a pretty darn good game. But after that, you're looking at Dougie McBuckets.
Yeah, Dougie McBuckets.
just not a very even effort from the team as a whole. We scrapped, we clawed, but we just didn't have enough in the tank. And big game Dame did what he does. Threw up 30 with 15 dimes and carried his team, Les McCollum, to a dub.
How long is McCollum out? Do we know? Is he going to be back for the playoffs?
Turned ankle, so hopefully. You know, that's one of those things that's hard to diagnose right at the time, right? It'll heal when it heals. He's a professional athlete. You'll probably hold him out under the circumstances for a little while and let him heal up and get right. That's what I would do.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a mad race for playoff seeding in the West right now, so every game they can win without him is a good win for them, and they probably knew that. I mean, they came out cold from three, and we took advantage of it. We were up 11 in the first. It seems to me, Harper, that the Pacers are competing. You know, one of the things Jason asked what he wanted to see for us on this Western road swing against the best teams in the West was just to compete, not to get blown out by 20 and 30 points, but to show that we can scrap on the road with the best in the West. And I think we definitely showed that in Denver, where we only lost by two. I thought we showed that in this game as well. But we're having trouble putting together four quarters. We play really well in stretches, but over the last, I'd say, 7 to 10 games, there's just really rough patches where, you know, we go cold, we start making sloppy mental errors, we can't hit a shot. You know, I mean, I think I made the ridiculous argument with you a couple weeks ago that we were better than Philly, and it was just we got cold from the floor for a quarter. It's a pattern now at this point. We went cold in this game. We turned the ball over only 14 times, but I felt like a lot of them were critical. And it was the end of the first half in particular that really, I thought, you know, we were up, I'd say, you know, in near double figures or, you know, whatever. And they got it down, I think, within three and a half.
Yeah, they ran off like a 9-0 run in the second. It was tough.
And then, you know, it's you're right, Damian Lillard. I mean, he was just unbelievable. And so was Nurkic, I thought. I thought he really bullied us down low. But he's much bigger than I think of him. I just thought he was a beast down there.
Yeah, he can certainly play. It's, you know, Kanter is a piece on that team that historically has been too small. So those are good additions for a playoff run. I think that they're better suited to compete in the playoffs this year than they were last. So I think they're in a better spot. They gave us plenty of opportunities in this game. I mean, I agree, you know, we competed in this game. And yes, that's something that should be circled, but if I'm being honest, that's what we do. Like, if we just stopped doing that, I would be really concerned, right? Mm. This is a team that doesn't look at the scoreboard very much and has short memories, and those are things that we really value, and they play for each other and they work hard. And, you know, we're a wide open Thaddeus Young or maybe a decent Miles Turner three away from snatching this one away.
Yeah, no, we were going to take the lead there with, what was it, 3 minutes left or something like that. If we'd hit, we had two or three chances at it. We just couldn't get it to go down.
We turned the ball over, but we definitely did a good job turning them over. Mm-hmm. It was a competitive game. It was a fun game to watch.
It was.
Even though, you know, two of the top three players on these rosters weren't available.
Right.
In Oladipo and McCollum. You know, it was probably a limited fan base for for a nationally televised game. But, I, you know, whatever. It is what it is. We are going to struggle on the road. This is not new, right? We do not play well on the road without Victor Oladipo. These droughts, they're because we don't know what to do. We don't have a guy. We don't have a play. We don't have the auto bucket. We just don't have it.
And we don't have the drought stopper. You're right. And that's what Oladipo
difference between,
did.
Yep. That's the difference between a superstar and not a superstar.
And
that's the world that we occupy now. So, I mean, as good as our defense has been all year, if we're giving up 100 points to teams at this point, we're likely going to lose.
Yeah. I mean, that's the concern. Can we put enough points on the board? Like, Turner had a fantastic game. He shot the ball 17 times, got 10 rebounds. These are the things that I've been asking for. I thought he was very effective. Bogdanović was fine, but we needed another person. And, you know, McDermott, I thought he got hot. We used him right. We gave him a lot of shots. But, you know, Sabonis was quiet, and he normally isn't. Thad Young was 1-8. We just needed one more guy, and we didn't have that guy in this game. For a team that's very balanced, you know, you kind of need everybody to do what they normally offer for you to win the game. And Thad Young and Darren Collison not really being able to score enough and not getting anything from Corey Joseph. I just thought we needed one more scorer, and we didn't have it. So.
Look, I'll give you that. You can say that, you know, finding the points is the problem. You can say that, you know, giving up 106 is the problem. Like, 100, like...
I thought we played good defense. I thought we did.
If we're a team that is going to start from defense, then 100 points is the number, right? We have trouble getting to 100. That's probably going to continue. So, defensively, we're going to have to be able to hold teams to two digits to win games. The reality is that just leaves a really thin margin for error. If you get cold, you don't get to 100, right?
Right.
If you... you know, you give up 106, you're done, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just the losing Oladipo means, especially on the road, our margin for error is just so razor thin that, you know, we're going to drop a lot of games. And make no mistake, Portland's a good team, mm-hmm. right? I mean, sure. they're sitting on the four spot in the West, and, you know, that puts them between Houston and San Antonio. I know you hate Houston, but gosh, they can play.
Right.
And, you know, we all respect what San Antonio does every year, and they're one of the hottest teams in the league.
Yeah, nine in a row right now. Yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, it was a good effort, and, you know, I root for the Blazers 363 days a year. I love these guys. It's a great team. It's a great organization. But they did what they did just enough to win. And really that was all Dame. I mean, he was in there slicing and dicing the defense in the interior, and he just, you know, he just murdered us.
Yep. He did.
He's the best guy on the floor.
And for sure. Well, and that's the thing, both of these games, you know, to start this Western road swing, you're right that, there's no margin for error because we've competed with these teams. We were up, I think 17 against Denver. We were up 11 against Portland. You've got to figure out how to hold that or step on their throat. It's tough on the road. You can't. It's hard to, you know, the crowd gets behind them. Like, it's just, NBA is tough. And this is,
yeah, NBA is super hard. It's
a very tough stretch. And I'm hoping we can sneak out one of the last two on this road trip, either against the Clippers or Golden State.
Yes, correct. So we usually do this at the end of the show, but closing out the road trip, we are recording on Tuesday the 19th. And are about to face the Clippers for a late 7:30 tip.
Or 10:30 on the East Coast. You don't care
7:30
about the East
Coast. Tip. We'll start doing it in Zulu time. And then we close out on Thursday at Golden State. Gotta head into the Roracle. Golden State obviously not playing their best ball. But they're still pretty darn good.
They're still real good. They still have the one seed in the West.
Yep. And they're not playing that well. Right. Sort of our next topic here was to look down the home stretch of the season a little bit. And the thing that I'm looking for most NBA-wide is where Golden State's going to land. Right? Mm. They haven't quite tightened it up yet. Everybody knows about the talent and the depth on that team. But can they get back to a place where they're super dominant. Doesn't look like that's probably going to happen to end the regular season. But if they can rip off 5 or 6 to end the year and then head into the playoffs with some confidence, that's really what this whole playoffs is about. I mean, both conferences look pretty wide open. I'm looking forward to these playoffs. I think it's going to be really, really entertaining. Unless Golden State just finds the other gear and then they're just going to murder everybody. Right? I mean,
yeah, no, you're right.
Unless I'm wrong, they won last year, right?
They did. Yeah.
They added Boogie good. Cousins.
Right.
Who looks amazing.
Yeah, he does. Although he just sprained his ankle, so he might miss a couple games.
MRI came back negative. He missed yesterday. He's off tonight, or actually, I think they're already done.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he'll be back for the playoffs.
Yeah.
I think there's a ton of excitement for playoff seeding, both the East and the West. So the Clippers are in the 8th seed, only 4 games back from the Houston Rockets in the 4 seed, or in the 3 seed. So there's only 10, 11 games left, but a lot is going to happen in that movement there. The Spurs just stole the 5th seed from the Thunder. I don't know how all this is going to shake out. It looks like Golden State and Denver will be 1-2 most likely, but we'll have to see, you know, how that shakes out. And in the East, can the Raptors make a final push here, try to catch the Bucks? Philly, Indiana, and Boston, that is all very fluid right now for the 3 through 5 seeds. And then, you know, Detroit, Brooklyn, Miami for 6 through 8. I think probably the Magic and the Hornets are out, but not statistically. So we'll see what happens there. I'm looking forward to see. I know that's just this is not exactly the end of the season, but I'm looking forward. I think the Bucks are going to win 60 games, and I'm looking forward to how they handle having the best record in the league going into the playoffs, because they haven't really done it before. And I'm just really curious about how that's going to play out, because teams like Toronto, Philly, Celtics, even the Pacers have playoff experience and could give them some trouble. So I don't know. I think it's going to be a hell of a playoffs.
The thing about Milwaukee though is they're probably going to draw Miami.
Oh, well, they're going to whoop up on somebody in the first round,
right? And so that's going to give them and Giannis specifically the confidence that they need to go into that. I'm not saying it's not going to get harder,
right?
But they're going to get a lot of confidence out of that first round drubbing that they're going
to. Well, I don't know. I mean, Miami's been playing well. They put Bam, your favorite player, in the starting lineup over
Bam Adebayo.
That's right, over Whiteside, and they've ripped off 7 of their last 10.
Cool. They benched their best player.
Yeah, their highest paid player doesn't mean their best player.
He is their best on the court player. He has the widest skill set. I mean, in terms of defense, you know, sure. I just he's such a head case, right? I mean, we're literally going to be talking about, you know, a 38 win team versus a 60 win team.
Sure.
This is gonna it's gonna be a.
I'm just saying they're playing better as of late. It looks like Dragic is getting fully healthy and playing better. Like I it could be more interesting than you think, potentially. Actually, they may not still be in the 8th seed if they keep playing like this. They could probably take over the Nets and the Pistons. They might end up being in the 6th seed. So,
what's kind of interesting about the seeding this year is it seems like, and most years, it's a wild fight for the 8th spot. But in both conferences, there's still room for somebody to move into the
8th. Statistically, eight, but, right.
Right, but there's just a lot more. Everything within the playoff picture is so much tighter than in normal years. I don't have any statistics to back that up. It's totally anecdotal.
Like last year when it came down to the last game of the year, whether Miami or Minnesota or Denver got in, you know, stuff like that.
Oh, so, yeah, right?
That's and not, we're I don't not think gonna we're have seeing that this year.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we're not. But we're going to see that in the 5-7 spots and probably the 5-8 spots in the West, right? I mean, that's, you know, and that makes for interesting basketball. I'd rather watch playoff teams competing against playoff teams in the regular season for seeding.
Before they get to the playoffs, right?
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Then what? Then watch a bunch of guys who are headed to the gallows against a one seed fight it out for, you know, getting whooped by Golden State.
Well, and that reminds me of another thing I'm looking forward to. Pacers get to play Boston two more times in this final stretch here. Those games are going to be playoff games. Because we're going to be fighting them for home court advantage, even in those games, I think. If we can win both of those, it gives us a chance to still get home court. That's going to be tough to do. One of them's on the road. So,
yep.
But
and Detroit's going to want to pull our card, too. They don't like us.
Sure. And they get to play us twice as well. So, it's a tough finish to the season, but, you know, I think that Oklahoma City Thunder win was huge. I think for our confidence, because you know we'd gotten whooped by the Bucks and the Sixers, and then we barely beat the Knicks. To go ahead and beat a playoff team in the West that emotionally, you know, I think did give us some confidence because we're not getting ran out of the building so far on this Western road swing. So hopefully we win some more tough games here.
Yeah, we still got some work to do. Four of our next five on the road.
Yeah.
And the home game is Denver.
Yeah.
Tough stretch. But one day at a time, right?
That's right. One day at a time, one game at a time. It'll be the playoffs soon enough.
Oh, I'm so excited. It's going to be a fun. This has been a fun season. And it's going to be a fun home stretch. And like I said, I think all around the NBA is just going to be a fantastic playoffs. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yep.
Last thing on the plate, Mr. Coulson. I think we have an undergoogleable.
Oh, are we doing undergoogleables?
That was the plan.
Super excited.
You told us we had to, so.
you said we signed up for it.
In the end, it's going to be better and more true than Google can give you.
We do. I was thinking about this on my drive home tonight. Why is red universally stop and green universally go? Now, let me start by saying to super fan of the show and art professor Jennifer Drinkwater that I know that red and green are contrasting colors, and so I assume that one of these decisions was made either stop is red or green is go, and then the other one became to mean the opposite, but I don't know which one came first and when it came about.
Sure.
So I don't feel like I feel like this goes back further than the psychology of color. You know, like they say that yellow makes you hungry and light green makes you smart or something and light blue makes you sleepy. I don't know. They've done all these studies and they paint rooms to make you feel different ways. And I assume that this did not come from that. I feel like this predates that.
That's a safe bet.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, when did somebody come up with a not stop light, a stop sign, right? And this was in, would this be the invention of cars? Did stop signs exist in different forms before cars showed up?
Yes.
Now, these are the questions I have.
Definitely. So I think the first real stop sign would probably be a lighthouse.
Okay. But that wasn't red.
You light crap on fire. That's red.
Okay. Fair enough. All right. Yeah. So you think that's where it comes from? You think it's don't hit this rock because we're gonna light this fire and it's red? Because you sort of think of it as orange, really, a fire maybe, or blue or white, depending on how far away you are from it or whatever. Or how hot it's burning.
Well, I'm not thinking about electric-driven White Houses. I'm thinking about, like, Athenian White
Houses. No, I know. But what I'm saying is a fire itself, like, depending on how hot it's burning, can be different colors, right? I usually think of it as white or orange and not red.
Sure. Okay.
That was my own... I'm not trying to shoot your idea down right away, but I'm shooting your idea down right away.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's definitely nautical, right? Okay. I mean, to this day, like, port and starboard are marked by red and green, right? So if you've got boat running lights, I believe that, I was confused port and starboard, but I believe starboard, is red and port is green, but don't hold me to that.
And port would be going forward?
No, it's right and left, basically, right? So you keep
clearly I've done a lot of sailing in my day.
Yeah, no, it's been a few years for me too, being I just, completely wealthy and never having to work. It's nice to just yacht for a living.
Well, now if green's on right and red's on left, or vice versa, how do I know? So would I turn the boat to tell people to stop? I don't know.
Well, so running lights on boats, like, you have your bow comes to a point, right?
Right.
And so on one side, there's a green light, and one side, there's a red. So you can tell which side of a boat you're looking at in the dark.
Right.
If it's coming, if you can see both, it's coming right at you, and you're in trouble.
Okay. Fair enough. Yeah. I like that.
So let me see. So if you're going into port, red, right, return, right? So keep the red on your right when you're going back into port. Like, that's a nautical thing.
Okay.
And I assume... I assume that the red came from lighthouses, because those were, like, the first major points of navigation. And I think that you're right. I think that green is the contrast.
Right. So what's the opposite color of red? Because we need to be the most opposite visually.
Right. And also, you don't want, you need a brighter color than, like, blue, right? Because you need navigable things at night.
Sure. So, okay. But at this point, you're so these light runners on ships. So at what point did we have, like, oil lamps with red covers on them and green covers on them? Like, did they have filaments for these things? Like, how far back can we go with the actual coloring of light on this stuff on the boats? You see what I'm saying?
I mean, that's a good question. I think that probably came around with electricity. I mean, I just don't think that there's enough water traffic to merit such a complex system. I mean, I think that I would have thought anyway that most of the time. Well, I don't know, because you think about, like, navies used to go in formation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you got the Spanish Armada, right?
Right.
If you're traveling at night, how do you know where you are relative to other ships?
I just assumed oil lamps.
And maybe that's enough, right? Maybe that is enough.
Yeah. Again, I guess my point is, I don't really think of fire as red. Like, if I have fire in a lighthouse, I don't just see that as red. I see that as light, as white or orange or yellow. Now, coals I think of as red. But, and maybe that's where it comes from. Like, red means hot, don't touch it. You know, strike while the iron's hot. I don't know. That's a different saying.
I think that there's something to that. I think idiomatically, there's always, we associate red not just with stop, but with danger.
Yeah.
And that may I'm sure that predates stop signs.
Red peppers are hotter than green peppers. I don't know. okay, so I guess I'm curious about the evolution of how, let's say it is nautical, how that got transferred to, how someone was like, yeah, universally, let's just do this. Because, like, you know, if you're in Europe, the stop signs are red as well, you know? Like, it's not just American stop signs.
Right. I mean, the question at that point becomes, who were the first people to start doing signage and lights? And I suspect that was America.
Yeah. We had Thomas Edison.
Well, not only Thomas Edison, but also Henry Ford, right? Yep. We had enough traffic to warrant, because none of this stuff matters if there's nothing to hit, right? And so you have other vehicles that there's risk of collision. These things aren't necessarily that important.
Sure, if you're just riding around in the forest on a horse, you know, like whatever, you're probably good.
Right. I to your point about the psychological thing, I think there is something sort of ominous about red. Red's the color of blood, for instance.
Okay, right? Okay.
And so there may be something that underlies it, that like red has been danger.
For as long as people bled.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, you know, if you were going to write a really ominous letter to someone, like a true threat back in the day, you probably wrote it in their blood.
Right, sure.
Right? Or in someone's blood. Like, that's super scary. That happens in, you know, Dracula movies.
Right.
I don't know if that ever happened in real life, but I assume it has.
Well, and green is you know, plant life and growth.
Yeah, it's
and,
earthy, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Less scary.
Mm-hmm. So I there probably is an aspect of it to that.
Are you going, we're not putting filaments on lamps on ships, so it's got to be later than that, right? Oil lamps. It's got to be later than oil lamps. You're saying it's the invention of the motor vehicle where they decided.
So, I mean, for lights, clearly, but that doesn't mean that it's not drawn from, that at least the red part isn't drawn from, you know, nautical stuff. You also have to navigate into a port in the dark without sat, right? Without sat nav, right? So they clearly must have had some, the only system that they could have had was lighting.
Right.
So, I mean, I'd be surprised if, you know, the Athenians and Greeks and all those dudes didn't have some sort of lighting system to lead people home.
Yeah.
And also, even in airplanes now, so airplanes do use red and white. Red over white, all right. White over red, you're dead. So when you're coming in for a landing,
mm-hmm.
there's landing lights that you align for your glide path.
Mm-hmm.
And when those are aligned correctly, like I said, red over white is the way that you want it.
Okay.
So clearly aviation has used the same red, but has gone away from the green.
Which is interesting.
Yeah. But I think that that buttresses the idea that the red came first and the green just kind of grew out.
Yes. Yes. And the green is just the contrasting color.
Yeah.
And I think that exactly. What we've kind of decided, red is blood, red is danger, red is hot coals.
So it's like the, you know, it's the color that you can make, right? Like orange, or like I agree, like fire tends to be orange, but red, if you can make any color that you want, is a better color. Yeah. Brighter.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So I'm going to say nautical, red is ancient, and stoplights such as they are were, and signs for that matter, were created in the U.S. sometime after Henry Ford. Oh, hey, look at this. The first thing that I found, the origin of the green, yellow, and red color scheme for traffic lights.
Nice.
While some of the specifics have been lost to history, it is known that this color scheme derives from a system used by the railroad industry since the 1830s. We forgot about the damn railroads.
Oh, we did. They're useful.
Idiots. This is why we need Jason and Joey on the show right here.
Of course it's the railroads.
They chose red as the color for stop, it is thought, because red has for centuries been used to indicate danger.
Okay.
For the other colors, they chose white as the color for go, and green as the color for caution. The choice of a white light for go turned out to cause a lot of problems.
Okay. I can see that.
In an incident in 1914, a red lens fell out of its holder, leaving the white light behind it exposed. This ended with a train running a stop signal and crashing into another train. Thus, the railroad decided to change it so the green meant go. Yep. In the late 1920s, several automatic signals were invented, so we were pretty close on when we got automatic signaling.
Are you seeing this thing about the guy who tried to stop a train with his red shirt? That seems anecdotal. Also, red is the easiest color to see by the human eye.
Right.
That's helpful. I do know a fun fact, and I wish I knew which direction it was. I guess I do. I think it's red is on the left if it's a sideways stoplight, yellow in the middle, and green on the right. But it always has to be the same for colorblind people. They can't just like switch it the other way.
Right. So semaphore. You know that flag thing that they do on ships?
Mm-hmm.
Comes from the ancient Greek word sema, meaning sign, and phoros, meaning bearer or bearing. So essentially semaphore translates to sign bearer. That's interesting. So maybe they were using flags back then too, I wonder.
Okay.
The railroad semaphore. So I guess, okay, so they're using this as... So semaphore is not only the flag thing, but it's also the light system. So the railroad semaphore system was originally patented by Joseph James Stevens in the 1840s. And in the U.S. and some other countries, modern traffic signals are either 8 or 12 inches in diameter and must be visible in every kind of weather and lighting condition. Yeah, it's important.
I do like the idea that, you know, we were going with lights and I was worrying about filaments over, you know, oil lamps. But, yeah, why not just have flags? Do whatever you want, right?
Yeah, I mean, nighttime's the problem.
Banners, right?
Okay, so I guess that's a true undergoogleable. we'll do a little bit more research and see if we can find you a more complete answer, and we'll link it in show notes if we can. If not, then just know red means stop and drive safely.
Yeah, if you've got an answer there, go ahead and hit us up on the... Well, you know how to contact us, or Harper does at least.
Yeah, you can contact us at Undebeatables on Twitter, Facebook.com/TheUndebeatables, or TheUndebeatables.com. And if you like the show, please do review us wherever you're listening to the show. Go ahead and lie. Give us 5 stars. We won't tell. And singing us out this week in true Pacers form.
For a once and always coach, Bobby Sklenard, now in the Hall of Fame. Turn out the lights, the party's over. I found this really interesting site that's giving me the history of stoplights. It's very exciting.
I mean, it is interesting, right?
Yeah. Apparently there was a street crossing signals that weren't lit up. They were just signs. They were different colors. That's kind of fun.
Yeah.
The first automated signs of Chicago in 1910.
Oh, wow.
They didn't light up. They just were indicators of stop and proceed.
Wait. You said they were automated, though.
Yeah. They weren't lights. They were just little arms. Like, they'd show a sign that said...
How were they automated?
There's a picture of it, and it's like this thing, and they've got little arms, and like, I guess they went up and down.
Right, but what's the automation part?
some form of electricity.
I'm concerned that our robot overlords have been here a lot longer than I was thinking.
I think it works on some form of electricity.
Mm-hmm.
Or the wind, maybe.
You're right. Yes, whoever gets to go is predicated upon
which downwind
wind's blowing. Yeah, exactly. Downwind goes first. Cheers, bud.
Cheers. Thanks for being available. It's always good to see you, man.
I'm a whore.